listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 189 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking to Kathy Heller about turning your musical inspiration into focused action. This is Kathy's second time on the podcast, and in her first interview, we talked a lot about the nuts and bolts of how she built a successful sync career as an independent artist. That episode was very popular, and I'll link to it again in the show notes, but we've got a bunch of follow-up emails by artists excited and inspired by the information, but also feeling like they didn't know how to turn that inspiration into daily action that gets results. Honestly, I felt the same way. So I asked Kathy to come back on the podcast to talk less about the what of her sync licensing, but more about the how, as in how she organizes her time and energy to make great things happen for her music on a daily basis. You can look at this episode as a part two or a companion piece to the previous interview, but if you haven't heard that previous episode yet, don't worry, you won't be lost. A couple notes. Kathy mentions her course Six-Figure Songwriting in this interview, which is a great course. However, since the recording of this podcast, Kathy has launched a new online course she created with Ari Herstand, another popular guest on the podcast, called How to Make Money in Music. If you want a more in-depth how-to on licensing your music and other ways to make money in the music industry as an indie artist, check out her new online course at this URL. It's smarturl.it/CDBabyAriKathy. That's smarturl.it/CDBabyAriKathy. And I'll be putting that link on the show notes of the episode. And speaking of that course, I'll also be making a few guest appearances in that course along the way. All right, with all that said, it's time to get to my interview with Kathy. Well, joining me for her second time on the podcast is Kathy Heller. Kathy, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. You're such a force. Everybody loves your show. Honestly, I do a lot of different things in my life, and this is one of the things I've gotten the biggest response from. I feel like you have created an audience that is so interested, loyal. I think you've created such good content. People are here, so I feel really appreciative to be back.
Well, I'm glad you're back. You're joining an elite group that have been on the podcast a second time.
I feel like Alec Baldwin, who's hosted SNL like five times. Like, this is a big deal.
So when you were on the podcast last, we were talking about sync licensing and how you'd built a business. And I will link to that episode of the podcast in the show notes of this episode so people can go back and make sure they hear that episode. It was one of our more popular episodes.
Thank you for saying that.
A lot of downloads, lots of excitement around it. And so in today's follow-up, I think we're going to address some of the thoughts artists had after hearing that. They get all inspired, and then they're thinking, what next? How do I actually put these ideas and concepts in motion? So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I sort of thought of it as planning for success, but I don't know I think you had a title that we could use.
I think planning for success is incredible because inspiration without action is not really going to amount to much. And I know so many people, they have that moment where they hear something clicks, and you think to yourself, okay, I'm ready. And then you say, well, wait a minute, what do I do? And I got so many emails. I literally got thousands of emails from listeners who want so much to see themselves be able to get their music license. They want to be able to make a living doing what they love. And I get that. I know what that feels like. I'm an artist. We speak the same language. And so I wanted to come on and give you some real tools, some next steps that you could walk away with. So when you are inspired, you can actually use that moment and do something about it. Taking action is everything.
And that was a lot of the feedback that I heard as well. People contacting me saying, that was amazing. I'm so inspired, but I still have no idea how
I
start.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of it is not necessarily the bigger, like, how do I find that industry contact or how do I do this or that? More to me, what I find as an artist myself and artists I talk to, it's more about that day-to-day management of your activities and getting yourself doing things that actually are productive.
So absolutely. Absolutely. And so I actually created a course around this. It's called Six Figure Songwriting, because so many times you wouldn't believe how many emails I get. People are saying, can I take you to coffee? Can I take you to lunch? Somebody offered to buy me groceries, and I really appreciate it, but I have so much work. And then I have three little kids, and I said, I got to just create a class that's online that lives. And so I've done some of this work so I could share this now with your audience. And anyone who finds this intriguing and wants more, you can go get a freebie. If you go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, you spell it out, S-I-X, sixfiguresongwriting.com. And I'm going to send you a download to a lyric cheat sheet and a calendar and a production cheat sheet, stuff that I actually only give in my course, but you can, because you're Kevin's fans, I'm going to support you and give you this information. So let's talk a little bit about what can you do with this inspiration. The very first thing I want to say just real quick is that first of all, you have to get out of your own way mentally. I feel like one of the big issues is that people don't do enough. They don't take enough action. And one of the reasons is because they think they're not ready. And it's a lie. Nobody who's successful was ever, quote unquote, ready. It's like, when are you ever really ready for anything? But you have to put that hustle in. You have to put that grit, that time it's going to take. And so one of the excuses we use is, well, I'm not good enough. I'm not ready. And it's really because we'd rather quit than lose. There's a part of us that faces our own inadequacy, and I still struggle with that. Every time I have something that I am going to write and I book a recording session or I book a co-write, there's always a little voice that says, maybe I should cancel it because maybe I'm not going to have something great to offer. Every time. And I have to confront that part of myself in order to get in the car and go there. And I feel like that's something that every person shares that. So when you walk down the street today, you can take comfort in that. Like, everyone in the car is next to you, people walking beside you, no matter what they wear, no matter what they look like. We all struggle with not feeling like we're enough, and we're going to have to overcome that and just start wherever we are, because we will build muscle and we will get better. And the thing that you will walk away with from this is some actual tools. But one thing I want you to know is, since most people don't take any action, by walking forward, you're going to stand out, because you're going to be amongst like 1% of people who actually have enough courage to do it and to actually take the leap.
Well, so I have to jump in here and say that when I went to college, I majored in music, and I'd only been playing guitar for a few years before I went. And I went to Nashville, well, the worst place to go if you want to feel, if you don't want to feel inadequate.
Yeah.
So I got there, and I was probably in the lower third of talent in my, you know, the class I was in, and just with all the guitar players and other musicians around me. But what was shocking to me is how many of them refused to take any action.
Yeah.
These very talented people that just weren't willing to even step out, even some, you know, simple things to just put themselves out there. They refused and just walked away from it. And that blew my mind.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. And it's because we all share that feeling of inadequacy, and we have to confront that. And so many people who are successful in the world, the thing I really think when I consider what they've done is that they have courage. And I think that that's really the biggest thing to walk away with, is that we're all in that same place. And so it's a matter of not being perfect. It's not about, you know, in fact, right now I'm listening to a great book on Audible by Angela Duckworth, and she just wrote this book called Grit. And she's talking about how they've really done research now, and they've found out that it's not IQ, and it's not where you come from, and it's not how much you weigh, and it's not any of these things, like talent even. It's your ability to stick to things. It's the ability to have that grit and stick at it. And the people who can do that are gonna get there. So if you combine your passion for something with perseverance, it's a guarantee. So that part is exciting, because you can control the effort you put in. And now the question is, but what strategy? Because if you're in New Orleans and you want to get to California and you don't make a left turn and head west, and you just have all the passion and perseverance in the world, but you head north, you're not going to get to California. So you really do need to have a great strategy. And one thing that I've always found to be true is, find somebody who's killing it in your field. Find somebody who's done it and reverse engineer their process. And that's what I've been doing. That's what I've done and continue to do every time I set out to take on a new craft, is I start to research what are the things that people have done. And then I have now put together what I used, what has been my strategy. So let's talk a little bit about, once you're going to get out of your own way and you're going to commit, what can you actually do? And remember, if this is going to be a music business, it can't just be a hobby, which means you need a plan. Businesses have business plans, and musicians, very often, we leave all of this stuff to the sidelines, and we have a lot of passion and enthusiasm, and then we don't really figure out how to work backwards, like the GPS. Where do you specifically want to get to, and what's going to be the path? And so you do a couple things, and then maybe it doesn't work, and you say, I've heard so many people say, well, I tried and it didn't work. It's like, well, what approach did you try? And like anything else in life, you have to try a few approaches until you get there. You know, we've all learned to walk. We've all learned to drive. We've all learned to swim. You know, there's been a lot of things in our lives that took different angles until we figured it out, but we continue to do it. And so for most people, I think what they really have done is tried one or two things. It doesn't work. And then they stop. And they stop right before they were about to hit a stride or they were about to be successful. So let's talk about what the plan is that I've used that I now teach in my six-figure songwriting class. I also pitch artists. You know, I run a licensing agency, and I help the artists that we pitch understand this strategy so they can be writing this kind of music and they can be approaching it in this way. And lo and behold, they've also now been making six figures, and it's been amazing. You know, we've done, even this year, even now that I do a podcast that's, you know, a really successful podcast on iTunes, and I teach a class, and I do a lot of speaking events, I still, my licensing still makes multi-six figures. It's still the thing, which is great because it gives me credibility. But it's amazing because these are songs I've written over the last 5 years, and they continue to get licensed over and over again because I wrote them using this strategy. I continue to write records using this strategy. So let's talk about, how do you license your songs? What is the business plan that you can start to implement? So the first thing is, if you're going to begin with the end in mind, you need to create music that works for sync licensing. You need to create music that's got your authenticity. It's got some real genuine spirit in it, because you can tell that from a mile away. It's got to be sung with earnestness. It's got to feel real, but it has to meet what it is that they need to fit the vision of a trailer or of a show or of a film or an ad. So working backwards from that, how can you deliver? How can you create music that's gonna meet those directors' visions? The first thing that you can do is figure out what lyrics are usually showing up. Because a lot of times when you're using a song for a sync, they're using the song to help deliver the message of that scene a little bit clearer. So let's look into what kinds of lyrics are being used in the kinds of shows you want to get your music on? What kinds of lyrics are being used in the ads that you love for iPad or Target? What are they talking about? And you're going to find a consistency. Now, if you want to get what I call my epic themes worksheet that I only have given to people in my class, you can go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, spell it out, S-I-X, sixfiguresongwriting.com, and you can sign up and I will send you this lyric sheet. And you can start to understand what I have found to be some of the most common themes that get written about. And I'm telling you, I've written these songs about home, these songs about togetherness, these songs about overcoming the odds. These songs get used over and over again because not that many people are beginning with the end in mind. And here's one little trick. You're going to need to write music a lot, okay? It's not about writing 4 songs. It's about writing 50 songs and 100 songs. Now, one thing to keep in mind is people will complain about this, and I say to them, why are you complaining about the work you want to do? Like, this is the thing you want to do day in and day out. You want to make a living doing it so that you can do it every day. So why be frustrated that it might take writing music? That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
So
I just want the money at the end. Can't you just give me the money? Right.
But here's the thing. I'm so glad you said it, because if we really just wanted money, we wouldn't be sitting here listening to the DIY Music Podcast by Kevin Bruner, who's amazing. We'd be talking about stocks and we'd be looking at hedge funds because we would want to just figure out money. But success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. You want to be fulfilled. So you want to do something that gives you a sense of purpose that's meaningful. You know, there's 150,000, I just looked into this because I was talking about it on my own podcast. Which is called Don't Keep Your Day Job. It's on iTunes right now. And it's all about how do creative people make a living doing what they love. And I looked into this. There's over 150,000 books on Amazon related to people trying to figure out what is my passion and what will give me a sense of purpose. If you're a songwriter and you already know what's your passion, you're so lucky. It's such a blessing to even know what lights you up, what gives you that sense of fulfillment in this world, because that is the thing. That's the holy grail. That's what everybody is looking for, is what gives you a sense of purpose. And so for me, writing music was always something that it's like a best friend. Like whenever I'm feeling down, whenever I need to feel uplifted, a celebratory moment, whatever the moment is, music is my first go-to. And I can cry it out. I can get that amazing high. So I knew that I wanted to give that to other people. And I recommit myself to reminding myself why I do it. And that purpose keeps me going for it. So let's talk a little bit about specifics. We talked about lyrics. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to get really comfortable using Google Docs because it's awesome. And one thing that you can start doing is you need to be writing a song at least once a week. And you're going to say to me, Kathy, I don't have the time. Okay, that's an excuse. You have the time. If you want to find it, you'll find it. Whatever we must get done, we do. You know, if you need to see somebody you love in your life, you carve out the time. This is you. This is what you want to do in the world. Carve out the time. So you'll wake up 30 minutes earlier, or you'll cut out watching Scandal this week and you'll DVR it. You'll watch it on Sunday. Whatever you need to do, open a Google Doc at least once a week and come up with what is going to be the epic theme that you're going to write about. Again, we're working backwards from what kinds of lyrics get used. I want you to just brain dump for an hour. I want you to spend an hour, and if an hour is too long, 30 to 40 minutes, write every possible thought you have on that theme. If the theme is togetherness or home, or the theme is, you know, possibility or female empowerment, I do it my way. We get asked for that stuff all the time. I want you to brain dump for like 30 to 40 minutes about this theme. Every story that comes to mind, the color that comes to mind, the feelings, the ideas, don't edit at the same time. When I started writing, I would try to write the song literally in its right syntax, in its order, verses, B section, chorus. I would try to write it on the page as it was going to be in the end in my first attempt at looking at this song. That's unfair. You know, editing is a separate process from creating. And if you edit yourself while you're creating, you're going to be judging yourself, essentially. You're going to be critical. It's not going to allow you the freedom to just get stuff out. So when I started doing this, it really relieved a lot of stress for me, and it made it easier to put the time into the craft because I could give myself time to think about stuff. And then a day later, I want you to go back when you've had a fresh night's sleep, you come at it with new eyes. And now I want you to highlight, you can use the highlighter tool in Google Docs, highlight the lines that stand out. Maybe one of them becomes a hook, maybe one becomes a verse. You're gonna walk away with a few nuggets that you put together in your brainstorming session, and this might be the start of the song. So that's one thing that I think that you guys should be doing, is coming up with a system. And I like to say in 90 days, if you work backwards, you could open up the calendar, flip ahead 90 days. And I have a 90-day calendar, which if you go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, I'll send you the 90-day calendar, which is usually just for people in my class. But it will help you because you can flip ahead and write down what's the 90-day from where you are now, and write down what you're going to do to celebrate. But working backwards, in 90 days, you could have written and recorded 3 to 6 songs. And from that, you could come up with something that might actually go the distance, because you're going to use this plan to work with the end in mind. So opening a Google Doc is the start of it. I would say setting up a co-writing session is a great thing to keep you accountable. So let's say Monday morning you wake up and you set up a co-write for Thursday. Now, you could show up live and co-write with somebody and meet in each other's house or studio or the park, or you could do it over Skype. There's no good reason why anything needs to stand in your way. I know people say to me, oh, I wish I could do this, but I live in the middle of Iowa and I don't have anybody around that likes to do this, which I'm sure is not true. I'm sure there's people in Iowa who love writing music too, but you might not know. You can go onto Facebook. There's a million songwriter groups, and you could post that you have this passion and enthusiasm for this plan and you want to try to get music licensed and you've already done some research and you'd like to have a co-writer, you can obviously do it on your own, but I think co-writing is great because it keeps you accountable. And having a person who's going to be there as a sounding board to hear your ideas will keep you in it, I think, in a different way, and keep you ready to get everything done for that co-writing session. So go ahead.
I was going to ask, I don't know if you were going to go there, but I'm curious for people that haven't done a co-writing session. I mean, a lot of people have like probably, you know, been in bands and collaborated with people, but how are these co-writing sessions actually structured so they're productive?
Yeah, exactly. And that is the whole point of my course, is helping you figure out how to maximize the time you have, because it is about that. I mean, if you're only going to have a small amount of time, and even if you had all the time in the world, you still want to get the most out of it. You don't want to work hard. You want to work smart. You want to have a strategy. So what I would do is when I plan a co-write, I would prep before the co-write. Instead of, there's so many people, they walk into a room, they haven't really given it much thought. They sit down with their guitar and they say, what do you want to write about? And then they spend the first 20 minutes just even trying to figure out what the song's going to be. Well, I broke up with someone. Well, I just went on this trip. I guess we could write about that. And there's really no direction. So it starts to feel so overwhelming. How would I ever figure out now how to get these songs to TV? So if it's about making money, and remember, licensing your music is great for exposure. It's great for being a catalyst for everything. So I would prep before the co-write. I would do research. What kinds of songs are good references for me? What kinds of lyrics am I looking at? What kinds of production? What kinds of pace? What's the drive in the song? How is it orchestrated? And I would bring three songs to the co-write. And at the beginning of the song, I would now have my Google Doc. I would have brainstormed something. And believe me, it's okay. Not all of it might get used. You're going to do what's best for the song. And the other person might also have stuff, which would be amazing. And you can pick the best pieces of what you both have. And maybe you say before the co-writing session that you want to write a song that's about this particular theme. And you both spend an hour before the co-write brainstorming. And when you get there, you're already so much further. You're so much further down the road. And now you can start looking at what you both have, and maybe only one of the lines remains, but that might be everything to help you snowball it into what's going to be a masterpiece. So you then, you look at lyrics, and again, you're going to do what's best for the song. Instead of having your ego in it, you're going to remember the goal is to get the song licensed. And so it's not about how many lines, you know, each person gets in. It's about what's best for the song. So you'll work off of each other. And I think that really helps, even if, you know, you're the one who has all of their own lyrics getting in and the other person didn't. The other person, just by being there, is going to help fuel you by asking you questions and throwing out things and brainstorming. That is still going to really help be very crucial. So then you can start singing along and figure out, you could tap your foot to the groove of one of the songs that you already love that works in this particular ad that you want to get your song into this brand's campaign. Just tap your foot along, feel that pacing of where the song is living, and see if you can emulate that vibe. You know, it's not about stealing anything, God forbid. It's just about being inspired by, where does that song live? And is it four on the floor? Is it sort of a rolling groove? What's happening in that song? And I think that will help the co-writing session be so much more productive if you're playing a few songs as references in the beginning, feeling inspired, coming in with some brainstorming already done on the lyric. You might be able to finish in an hour with something fantastic because so much thought was put into that.
You're mentioning a lot, starting with the lyric. Yeah, I'm assuming that there'll be time where people just have musical ideas based off of, you know, some of those themes as well.
That's true too. Exactly. I mean, the other part of what I do is I tell people to spend time researching. And when you're buying songs that you're finding are being used in ads or trailers or TV shows, I want you to buy these songs. I want you to make a new playlist every month of 20 songs. I want you to buy 20 songs from iTunes and listen to them in your car. So by the end of that month, each month, you're absorbing what's working and you're getting a sense musically of where things are living. That show has a particular sonic brand. The ad has a different sound. What's the palette going to be musically? When you're thinking melody, when you're thinking rhythm, you're going to really get clear on where that needs to be. And then you can set up a producing session. And what I usually do is before I even open that Google Doc, I schedule out 3 weeks ahead or 2 weeks ahead a day in the studio. And from there, I backtrack, set up a co-write, and tell my co-writer, I already have a day booked, so we have to get this song done. And then before that, I prep my Google Doc, I prep my research, and I come in with a musical idea of where I want to be and a reference for that, as well as a lyrical guide. So I'm already keeping myself accountable. And by setting up a day to be in the studio, I already am letting my songwriting partner know I'm going to get it done. You know, a lot of people don't finish anything. And it's so, isn't it true? It's so
very true. It's true.
It's just so frustrating. It's like you have all this, anybody can come up with ideas. It's the execution, right? It's getting it done. And there's so much to be said for something that's finished. So I find that in my life, even though I wasn't necessarily the best musician, there's people who can run circles around me. I think people liked working with me because they're like, all right, Kathy's going to come in with all this done and she's going to get it finished. She's going to set up a recording session. So I know whatever we do will actually be done. And I think that, you know, allowed me to get into rooms with great co-writers and everything sort of grew from the hustle and having a plan.
Well, I like the idea of setting a session date because it's funny. I am headed into the recording studio at the end of the month for a new project with my band.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I've had Pro Tools sessions for a while that I'm supposed to be working on, but I always work best when I'm under the gun.
It's like, yes, everybody does.
I have 2 months sitting there, like, I'll do it next weekend. I'll get around to it. Then, but when it's like, it's go time, it's like suddenly I'm actually being far more productive and making very good progress. So,
no, it's absolutely true. Everybody's wired that way, and especially artists. You know, you need to have a deadline, and then you can work backwards from there. And speaking of this, a lot of people ask me, you know, I just recently got a question. This girl Meredith wrote to me, and she said, how do I set up a producer session when I don't have the kind of money to produce my music? And I said, you wouldn't believe how many people are out there who can do a great job at this, and you don't necessarily have to pay top dollar. You could set up an arrangement with someone where they could own a piece of the back end, they could own a piece of the master. There are so much, right now there's no excuse because we have the internet. So you can go onto Facebook and look at groups like Berkeley Alumni, Belmont Alumni, Full Sail Alumni. There's all these music schools that have incredible groups for their alumni. There's also different groups of songwriters and musicians. And if you come to somebody with a plan, with enthusiasm, and you have an idea of what you want to do, and you're working backwards from, in the end, when this is finished, I'm going to email this to 15 licensing agents. I'm going to email this to the 4 music supervisors I've already been following on Twitter. Whatever it is, you might find someone who's really great, who's 22, who's sitting in their house and has a laptop, and who can produce this and make it amazing. And they don't even have to live in your city. You could Skype, they could be working on stuff, you could fly vocals over. There's so many ways to get this done. There doesn't have to be a reason why you can't do it. Especially if you come to them with references, that's essentially producing in and of itself. If you say, I have these 3 references, and what I love about this one is the build. What I love about this is the pizzicato strings. What I love about this one is the 4 on the floor and the gang vocals. You're going to help them deliver the vision that you have. They, at that point, need to be a decent producer, but a really good engineer. And there's a lot of those people.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, like you said, it's pretty easy to track people down. And that area of the business, they're starving for work too. A lot of those folks are more than happy to dive in on a project. Even if they're normally a high dollar producer, sometimes they've got 2 weeks off between gigs and they want to work. So they'll pick something up just so they're not sitting idle.
Absolutely. I mean, I find that now I spend no money to record anything. You know, yes, I have a little bit of credibility and I run an agency, but even when I didn't, when I just started with this plan of I want to write music for licensing, having that plan, I worked backwards. I looked at what indie producers had worked with indie songwriters who were already licensing their songs. And I reached out to them and said, what if I can only give you $500 or $300, but I'll give you a huge percentage of the master ownership or all of the master ownership because you are essentially then paying for the master. And eventually I would pay, you know, I would have to give less and less on the back end because people were excited about the potential that these songs would get licensed because I had a track record. But I used to, in the beginning, spend $3,000 on songs that weren't even good. I was just not working smart. I was just, you know, you need a good strategy. You need a good strategy. And these weren't even songs that I should have been spending money to produce, because the lyrics weren't even there. And the structure wasn't even there in terms of what would make me money. But you have to start where you are. And it led me to, you know, the next step and the next step. I recently saw a great video by Ira Glass, who does the most fantastic podcast, This American Life. And he was talking about how people have great taste when they start out. You have good taste. You know, you're an artist. You know when something's good. You can point out, oh, this song is going to go the distance. This artist is great. These beats are great. But for you to actually make that kind of music, there's a gap between where you initially start out having great taste and what you're going to be able to create yourself. And so you have to stay in it. You have to stay in it and be willing to keep going. And I just read this other great book by Carol Dweck. It's called Mindset. And she has great research. And she basically found out that people are obsessed with results, the immediacy of results, as opposed to effort. And they've done the research now to find out that your brain literally changes when it responds to challenges. So failure is not a permanent state. It's not. Like, you're literally going to get better when you put in effort. And, you know, Malcolm Gladwell has this and Outliers, he talks about like those 10,000 hours, putting in that 10,000 hours, and that's what makes someone a master of something. Mm-hmm. People are not willing to hone their craft. They assume that if it doesn't happen out the gate, they're not meant to do it. It's not their path. It's not going to happen ever. That's not true. I mean, everybody has a different feeling about, you know, the Super Bowl, you know, Pats versus Atlanta. But what's crazy is I read this story that Tom Brady was the 199th draft pick. Like, he was not that guy out the gate that anyone thought was going to be, you know, winning the most amount of Super Bowl. Nobody thought that. But that's what it means to hone your craft. I've seen Olympic athletes talk about how, you know, everybody sees the race, but people don't see the behind the scenes of, like, the running so many times that you throw up. You're just practicing because it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you spent, it took me, I'll be really, like, let's get really clear and frank. It took me 18 months from when I first started out and was like, I'm going to write music for licensing. You know, this is 10 years ago. I worked on it. I started writing these lyrics. I started looking, doing research. 18 months later, I made $95,000 a year and a half later. And from there, it's only grown. So was it worth it? Yeah, it was worth it. Not only because I can make multi six figures doing something I love, but because I really like it. I like my life. I enjoy it. And everybody deserves that. And people, you have to, like, prime yourself. You can't assume that you're going to wake up in the morning, you're just going to feel psyched and inspired. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be hiccups. You're going to have self-doubt. So many people around us are going to tell you it's not going to happen. And it's because they're so threatened even listening to you glimpse doing it, because they gave up on their dream so long ago. So I think you need to put yourself in an environment and surround yourself with people who believe in what's possible and who do the work. And you're going to have to keep doing the work. So you have to keep reminding yourself of what can be and why you deserve to live a life that's fulfilling, because it's very short. It's a very short ride. So we should like it.
Going back to what you mentioned about the production, I was listening to the past interview we did, and we mentioned production very briefly, but we didn't really go into any detail. And since you were sort of getting into a little bit more detail and some of the cost and such like that, how much production do you really need to plan for producing something for placement, like what you're talking about, where you're sort of reverse engineering it? I know as an artist approaching, like, how they might make a record for, like, this is my band's latest record, they're probably thinking a lot more in depth, maybe, you know, spending more time tinkering around. I'm just trying to figure out what should be the mindset. Is like, what's an acceptable level of production? What may be going too far and wasting time and money?
Absolutely.
How do you approach that?
Yeah, I love that question, because I have seen people waste money and waste time. You know, there's so many amazing MIDI plugins right now that you don't necessarily need to hire a drummer, although that would be great. But if you have a producer who's a drummer, which most of them actually are, fine. But if you can't, I wouldn't obsess over the things that are not going to actually, in the end, you know, be financially prudent. I would try to do as much as you can without having to spend so much time and so much money. And again, getting it done, but working from what's actually already working and A-being it. Like, listen to what's out there and listen to what you're doing. Is it the same? What, try to research and understand, pull it apart. Can you analyze, why does this song work? What's in Spencer Ludwig's song that makes that work for licensing, because it's getting licensed all the time. What is it about it? What groove is it in? And what's he doing? You know, Robin Frederick, I recently had her as a guest at a workshop of mine, and she has amazing videos. She kind of like pulls this apart. Like, why does this music work production-wise? And I think if you go in and you have a decent producer, they don't have to be the most expensive, they don't have to be the best in the world, but if they have good ears and you sit together for 20 minutes, that 20 minutes will be so valuable. Instead of just like letting them sort of wander and you guys just sort of go with the flow. No. Start out 20 minutes, listen to the three songs that you love that work for this particular show or this ad that you feel like is your target, and try to analyze it together. Why do you like it? What are the aspects of it that you like? And is it the rhythm? And rhythm is something that you can borrow. Like, you can borrow rhythm. You can listen to the design of things, the landscape of things. Obviously, you're not stealing chords and you're not stealing lyrics, but you can listen to what instrument is in there that you love. Use it. You can use that same, you know, what's it called? The sometimes we use like a toy piano. Sometimes we use, you know, what are the things that you're hearing that are standing out to you? You know, Passion Pit has this great song, Carried Away, and it's like this 80s groove, and then in the middle it becomes very not 80s because it's this gang vocal, so it's like the band Fun mixed with Depeche Mode, and it's cool. It's really cool. So you could, obviously you can be inspired by that, but I think that if you spent a few minutes at the beginning of a recording session and you had already put in the time to choose what references you think are really working and that speak to you and that match a sound that you think is yours, you could sit down and listen to that and be inspired by that. And then I don't think that you necessarily have to hire, you know, every single person to play every single thing. I think that you can use some plugins. I think you can be smart about it, and know which things are going to be key that you really have to have. Like, I know for some film placements I've had, I've really wanted a cello, like a real cello. And so I've hired Dave Eggers. He plays for Philip Phillips. He's a great studio musician also. And he's not even here. He's in New York. I'll send him a track and he'll lay cello down. But that'll be the one thing that we'll spend the money on, because we'll know we can't fake a cello. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, if you want to know, when I go to the studio, I'll go in and 5 hours later, the song is done, completely done. That's vocals, tracking, everything. It should only take you that long.
And even mixing, or do you considering that?
You know, it's like a board mix at that point. Yeah. So yeah, my producer will go back and spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours mixing it. But it's pretty much there after 5 hours, including vocals, mm-hmm. because we know where we're going when we get there. That's why.
So what's next? You've talked about the making a plan and reverse engineering and
scheduling
time is sort of a way to keep yourself accountable.
Yep. So you're going to schedule time working. Let's go from the end. You know, again, being very specific is very helpful. You know, there are some people who say, I want to be an artist. It's like, okay, well, what kind of artist do you want to be? Do you want to be touring? Do you want to have your songs in a certain genre? So being very specific, if you want to license your music, what do you want to license your music for? Like, what ultimately do you feel like is the place for your music to be? And working backwards from that, you would start saying, okay, well, how am I going to get my music to those music supervisors? And then there's going to be a list that you can develop by doing some research. Who are the licensing agents who have those kinds of rosters? And then what kinds of songs should you be sending them? And the key here is going to be sending what is really going to solve their problems. A lot of people are waiting for opportunities, and the way that you're going to make things happen for yourself is by solving a problem. If you say to yourself, you know, I want to be someone who stands out. So instead of just sending a song and hoping that somebody has the ability to be creative and see how it could stretch to fit what it is they're working on, how about you deliver what it is you know they need and solve their problem? So then you're going to say, I need to get those songs recorded, and I'm going to send a link of my songs to not just 5 licensing agents, but I want you to make a list of like 20, 30. And I want you to send emails, really nice personable emails. We talked about this in the first time we did this, but I want you to not take it personally if you don't hear back. I want you to be persistent and polite. And if you write to someone once a month, I think that's totally okay. Remember that people are busy and people have lives, and you need to be persistent in order to do that. And there's other things that you can do as well. You could be researching. You can go to Advertilog, which is great. And it's a website which shows all the different ads. Okay, so you can search by print ads, which you wouldn't want, or you could search by broadcast. So you can start searching broadcast, and you can see which ad agencies are working on which particular brands. Who's working on Pepsi, who's working on Target, you can see that. Well, all these ad agencies have thousands of offices, and they have offices abroad also. How many people do you think are reaching out to these agencies in the Czech Republic every day? Probably not that many. You know, there's probably some, but not that many. So I reach out to those people. And sure enough, we did a spot with a big super, you know, market out there. It was $24,000 for my artist. Not bad. If you look on websites of Zinc, which is a great licensing agency, or Secret Road, you're going to see work that they do abroad. You have to be a squeaky wheel, but I want you to think every day. I want you to wake up, remember why you love doing this, so you're willing to put in the work. Remember that this is going to take hustle, and that when you hustle, you're going to stand out. And then I want you to write down 3 things you can do every day. What are 3 things you can do today? Is there something you could be listening to? Is there music you can be writing? Is there someone you could be reaching out to? Is there something you should be researching? What can you be researching? Could you be researching what artists have been in which spots? Can you research who's been producing those songs? Can you research who's licensing those songs? Can you research who the companies are who are working on those ads? You could even be reaching out to editors. You could be reaching out to editors for film, for TV. You can go to IMDb and look at who are the editors. Do some of those people have websites? You will be surprised. You could probably find people who have a website right there, and you know they're using that website so that they can get work and be called in by a director, but they're available. And editors need music. Editors are the first person to temp in a song. And typically, people actually fall in love with it. And then they sometimes have to work backwards and say, oh God, I don't even know if we can clear that song. The editor just kind of found it. But usually if an editor is gonna present a piece, whether it's a clip of a show or an ad, they wanna make it feel good. So they're gonna temp in a song. So send them stuff. And again, also be the easiest person to work with. So make sure your songs are really easy to clear. When I started out, I said, I'll never have control over being the most talented, but I can hone my craft, which means I will get better. And I can also be the easiest person to work with, as well as the most grateful and appreciative. So I would make sure that my music was one stop, which means I would make arrangements with my co-writers that if and when my licensing agent asked me if we could approve something, they would only have to ask me. My co-writers would give me the right to sign off on the song. Now that is essential, because the clearance of music has become such an ordeal that if your song is just as good or almost as good even as another song, but your song is easier to clear, they're going to come to you over and over and over again. I mean, I feel like part of my success has been that the songs are good, and I also think my songs are easy to clear and people can trust me. It's so hard to find an artist who also has the business stuff together. So if you're somebody who understands that you own your master and your publishing, you don't just think you own it all, you know you own it all, and you know that your co-writer, even if they own a piece of it, is good with you having control over it all. You might not even have to own it all, but if you have the control over it all, and you really do, and nobody ever pops up and says, no, you didn't. I mean, if that happens, you burn the bridge forever, and you'll stand out by being professional, because a lot of artists don't have that part together.
Yeah, and it's really important, because if, like you said, you'll not only burn that bridge, but it's possible, depending on, you know, what kind of placement it is, that someone could lose their job over it.
Right.
You don't want to be the person that said, oh yeah, I've got all the rights to do this, and then that music supervisor ends up losing their job or gets the production in a lot of trouble for using music that someone pops up and says, you did not have permission, and now talk to my lawyer.
Absolutely. You know, it's really true. I've heard people say that, like what you just said, that they've lost jobs. People have been sued to the tune of like millions and millions of dollars. In fact, Omnicom, which is a great conglomerate that owns DDB, BBDO, TBWA, all these big ad agencies, they started something called where they could have their own music. They could have their own music for their producers that they already know is easy to clear because they've had to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuits because some producer cleared something, not realizing that music is the scariest, most hard thing to fully clear unless you really know for sure. And people come out of the woodwork and say, that was my song. And then they have to pay damages, not just what they paid the other co-writer, but interest. It's horrible. So if you stand out and your music is great for the project creatively, and if you are professional, you're going to get there. So put in that hustle. And remember this, there's thousands of opportunities right now for songs. Everywhere you see media, whether it's even when you go to the gas station and there's those little, you know, videos playing, wherever you are, trailers, videos, promos, everyone needs a song. So creating that music is a good idea. There's definitely a need for it. And from there, you're going to have leverage and people are going to see your song or hear your song in a TV show or a trailer, and they're going to start buying it. And it's going to, you know, snowball everything else.
Yep, exactly. So you're talking about getting everything. We've talked about getting up to the point of having it ready to go, ready to clear. And then what's the next step?
Yeah, so like I was saying, I mean, you can start doing research, and there are so many people. When you're specific and you say, I want to get my songs to Coca-Cola, or I want to get my songs on a Shonda Rhimes show, there's only a specific group of a limited amount of people who work on that project. You can start looking into who are those people. And I'm telling you, if you're polite and you're a squeaky wheel and you stick to it, you don't just send one email and then give up. But if you had it in your mind that you were going to send, you know, 8 emails to each person and you were going to come up with a list of 50 people a month to send emails to, I'm telling you, you can. If you ask yourself that question, who would I be sending to? You wouldn't believe it. I mean, recently a friend of mine wanted to relocate. And he said to me, Kathy, you're so good at this. I'm moving to New England. I need a job. So I made a list of all the companies that are headquartered there. ESPN's in Connecticut, Pepsi's in Purchase, New York. Seriously, I made a list for him. And then I emailed for him HR people at companies. I don't even work in that field. He's a financial controller who wanted a job at a company, a Fortune, you know, 100 company in New England. So I sent emails. He had meetings. He was Kathy. So I sent emails and I would say, hi, you know, my friend Scott, he's moving out there. He's got 3 kids. He wants a better quality of life than Los Angeles. He wants to move back home to New England. Here's what he does. Here's a picture of his kids. People were like, cool, what's his number? Like, seriously. So he's like, Kathy, are you insane? I'm like, no, but no one does it. Like, who's doing that? Who's going on looking at LinkedIn? You know, and I would just type in human resources director, you know, Pepsi. So why can't you do that? Why can't you look at the brands or look at the shows and then go to IMDb? Who's the editor? Who's the music supervisor? Where can you find them? Are they on Twitter? Start following them. Tweet to them. You'd be surprised. You would be surprised at how people just don't do the obvious. But we have an internet. You can find people. A lot of music supervisors have websites because they do independent supervision. So they'll do like, you know, 6 or 7 different shows, and they themselves have a website because they're an entity and they want to get business. And yes, you have to be a squeaky wheel. And it is about honing your craft. It's not going to happen necessarily in the first 4 songs you write. But I guarantee you, if you're doing this research, you're listening to what's working, you're sitting down to hone that craft and write those songs, you're opening those Google Docs, you're setting up co-writes, you're going into the studio with a plan, and you're coming up with music that creatively works, and it also is easy to clear. If you stick to that, you're going to be one of the few who does, and eventually you're going to get noticed. Now, in my course, this is what my course does. You know, I put people in a group where they work with other members of the course so that they can create this content. But it's really about that mindset. And I think, you know, the main thing that I provide is I'm a mentor. I'm somebody who's done it, so I can help you stick in it. And then, you know, give you nuts and bolts on every one of these things so that you can dive into it better. But again, if you want some of my freebies, just go to 6figuresongwriting.com. S-I-X, sixfiguresongwriting.com, and I'll send you a lyric cheat sheet. I'll send you a calendar. I'll send you stuff that you can start to use some of those tools to see if you can start putting this together. But I think it really is important to remember that it's going to be ups and downs, but if you prepare ahead of time for that, see, that's the thing. Like, we forget that we sometimes get so defeated. And it's really ridiculous because artists have the most beautiful stuff to offer to the world. And the guys who run those hedge funds, they're not as sensitive. They can handle the rejection better. So they make multi-millions of dollars. But you have something really important to offer. And come on, I mean, the way that the world is right now, I feel like there's no better time for us to be creating beautiful things. And people, you know, the truth is when you're genuinely happy, that's probably the best way for you to make a difference in the world, just to make yourself genuinely loving life. But then what you'll create will be something that actually can go the distance. And one thing that I know is that people will think, well, I don't think my songs for licensing are authentic because they're so positive. They're so uplifting. You know, One Republic, I was just listening yesterday in the car. I was driving home, and that song, Good Life, it's going to be a good life, good life. That song gets licensed, but so does their song, I Lived. A lot of their songs are these anthemic, big songs that feel good. And people will think somehow, unless you're sad, then it's not art. That's not true.
That's
like,
funny.
Isn't
Art's
it true? Like,
sad.
Yeah, I mean, I love Woody Allen. You know, I'm a Jewish girl from New York, so I love Woody Allen. But like he says, you know, comedy is tragedy plus time. And so he's always this nervous wreck, and it's all very like intense and neurotic. And I used to think that art meant, you know, something has to be wrong. It's not true. I mean, how many things right now are so uplifting? And thank goodness for shows like Hamilton. Thank goodness for music that comes out and you say, this allows me to feel like I can keep going. We really desperately need it right now. So artists will be the ones who take things so personally. They get so easily defeated and they give up. And that's really sad. So we have to work on that. And I'd like you to make a list of what are the 10 things that might come up that might get you down, and how will you prepare to deal with that? Like, what if you don't hear back from somebody after 4 emails? Can you keep emailing? What if somebody says it's not great, they don't like it? Okay, so can you keep working on it? Can you make it better? Could you reach out to 4 other people and see what they think about it? We've got to stick in this. I just watched on Facebook, Colonel Sanders, Kentucky Fried Chicken. He didn't start that business till he was in his 60s. Like, it's okay if it takes time. Now, he had like several other careers before that. But once he started, people also thought it was like a silly idea. Like, who's going to, you know, buy chicken on the go? It's like, well, little do you know, mashed potatoes are pretty good too. We've got to stick in it. And you've got to sort of prepare for that. And I think that's the ultimate, resource, is that grit. And I do this podcast, like I said, Don't Keep Your Day Job. And we have different creative people on, whether they're bakers or TV directors or musicians. And the number one thing is that they go through setbacks, but they get back up. You've got to get back up. Because if it's worth it, if this is what gives you purpose in life, how could you not, when you really remember why?
Exactly. I think that was a kind of a great idea and thought to wrap up the end of sort of your plan that we've been talking about. What we did want to leave some time for some, you said you got so many questions from artists and you thought you might hit on a couple that you got from our last podcast. Dive into those now?
Yeah, we could dive into some of those. So Stephanie emails me and she tells me that she lives in Hawaii, which is pretty cool. And she's saying that she has been writing music and nothing's really happened. And she wants to know how she can get that music, you know, onto TV and film. And the reason I'm mentioning Stephanie is because this is the question I get from so many people. And people, it's funny, like people listen to what I'm saying, but then they don't necessarily connect the dots. So it's like the songs that you've written, so many people sent me music, and I'm going to be totally frank. A lot of it has good stuff in it. Like there'll be a good vocal or there'll be something beautiful in the lyric, but it's not completely there yet. So two things. One, you got to write more music. You can't just get down and out because the one record you wrote in your life didn't make it. And again, it's about what we talked about, beginning with the end in mind. What is the plan? Somebody sent me a song yesterday. He said, I listened to the CD Baby. People are still listening to it, by the way, Kevin, the first thing that we did. People still listen to it till this day. He sent me a song, and here's the thing about his song. So his name is Michael, and you know, he lives in Boston, which is great. I love Boston. And he said to me, what about this song? And it's actually a cool song. And it's about, it's called We're Gonna Fly. And so he said, what do you think about it? And I said, I wrote back and I said, actually, the vocal was great, really. He had this great singer that he works with singing it. And also the lyrics were perfect. And his production ideas were really good. He had like some stomps and claps and some oh-oh-ohs. And it wasn't cheesy because the vocalist was really, like, I believe the vocalist, he had a great voice. And I think also guys somehow can get away with singing these more saccharine lyrics sometimes in a more honest way. So everything was there, but it wasn't produced well enough. I didn't feel like the vocal, even just the way it was recorded, I felt like it was, there was too much room noise. I felt like when he did have those ideas with the stomps and the claps and the gang vocals, they should just be bigger. I think it just needed a better mix, frankly. And so I would say to him, also, it was a little slow. So it's like everything was there, but it wasn't polished. It wasn't big enough. And so the same thing for Stephanie and Michael is that A, B, what you're doing against what you're hearing being used. What's the difference? So for Stephanie, she just had this sort of slow acoustic singer-songwriter record, which was nice. There's so many of those. It's really hard to cut through the noise when you're writing a song that's just kind of your singer-songwriter record. Every music supervisor probably has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of those kinds of songs. So in order for them to use yours, they're gonna probably use something that they already like or some, you know, one of the hundreds of thousands they already have. They might not even, you know, download it because it's not something they need. But when I started out and I was writing songs about Let Your Color Shine and We're Good Together and, you know, Good, Good Feeling and all of these songs, people right away saw the title and they were like, oh, wait a minute, let me click on that. And then they hear these sort of big anthemic feel-good songs. They're like, oh, that's not just a singer-songwriter acoustic guitar. I'm gonna save that. So listen to what's working and really A-B it and stay in it. I mean, that is the biggest thing that people keep asking me is, you know, how are they going to get their songs there? And a lot of people are saying, you know, Rebecca wrote in and she's like, well, I don't have a list of amazing sync licensing agents. You know, can you give me a list? And my answer is this. She sent me a link to her two songs and they weren't there yet. So before you send that music, it's got to be amazing. It's got to be, because if you actually do get through to a sync licensing person who clicks on it and they don't like it, that's not going to be great. You know, if you finally actually get them to listen, it's got to be awesome. And one thing I'll say is people were writing into me a lot. Maggie wrote into me. She's like, well, people say on their website, it's they don't take unsolicited material. So here's what I want you to know. No doesn't mean never, okay? And you've got to just push. I mean, you really do. Like, whenever we go to a restaurant, my husband's like, is there a wait? I go, yeah. He goes, you got a table, right? I'm like, I always get the table. Like, I'll find a way to, you know, schmooze with the guy who's at the front. And I'll be like, I know it's really rough. And those people aren't nice to you, right? You know, and I'll find a way to, like, you know, make a connection with this person. And then I'll usually wind up like, no joke, like, we just had a notary come over and I needed a notary so bad for something. And I saw her in the bank and I said, could you come with me to my house? Next thing I know, she's been here now twice with her husband. We became friends. I try to make friends everywhere because I do like people a lot, but no does not mean never. So those are a few things to keep in mind. A, B, what you're creating against what you're hearing. Make sure you're doing that research. Keep reaching out to people regardless, but make sure the work is there. And if you need to put yourself in some kind of a program, I really do think this program I've created is not just great because it's me. That's not my point, but it's the people in the group are driven. It's really fascinating. I have very rarely seen a group of artists who wake up and get stuff done. And I think they help fuel each other inspiration because they see each other. We have a Facebook group that's private where people in the course, they collaborate and they constantly are posting what they're doing and people give each other feedback. And then the other cool thing I just started doing in my class is, since I am an agent and we do submit things to ads and film and TV, I started posting inside the class when we have a search, and people inside the class, I will allow them to pitch you know, for stuff that we are working on, they'll send it to us and I'll look through it. And if it's good, I already, you know, as of like last month, I was sending some of the artists in our class to, I was pitching them to spots for the Super Bowl because I was preparing them for that. And the last question I'll sum up with is on this point, which is why I'm mentioning it. So Christopher wrote to me and he lives in Gainesville, Florida, which is cool because I went to school in Tallahassee. So that's awesome. But the thing that he was saying is, you know, would you represent me? And his music wasn't quite there. And the reason why we say no to 99.9% of people who pitch to us, I am, you know, we are an agency, is because the music isn't there yet. And so why people say, well, can you send me, you know, the searches you get and I'll write for it? Well, I can't because we get like 6 searches a day and it takes me about 45 minutes to an hour to put together a folder. I look at what they sent me, I listen to the references, and I look through the artists that we have. And I want to make sure that the artists I'm looking through, I already know it won't be a waste of time. I want to make sure that the music I'm looking through or who I'm putting the music out to and saying, you know, we have a search. Sometimes I will reach out to a few artists about it who we rep or in my class because I know that it won't be a waste of time. I know that they're already going to be writing songs on those themes and that I can trust that they understand that I can clear the song. I've had a couple instances where I've pitched a song in good faith, believing somebody that they own, you know, 200% the writer and the publishing or that they control it. And boy, has that bit me back a couple times and I just can't risk it. So what I do is I try to develop relationships only with people who I know are ready to go. And there are times where people submit stuff and we will sign a band. Recently, we signed a band called The Pastels. They used to be with Zinc. And when I saw they used to be with Zinc, I knew right away they're probably great. Then I clicked on the music and it was fantastic. And a few of the people in my class who were brand new, this girl, Rachel, she has this song called Wild Heart. If you come to my public Facebook page, I'll post it. I have a public Facebook page called How to License Your Music. And sometimes I do live Q&As in there, but I'll post the song there. She's fantastic. It's called Wild Heart. We've now sent it to like 85 music supervisors and individually. I don't send out blasts. So we're supporting people inside the class who are creating things, but people will say, why can't you, you know, send me searches or why can't you just sign me and help me? It's like, well, we don't have all those extra hours to do what it would take, which is why I created the course to help people nuts and bolts get into a program and create the kinds of songs so that in the end, we're listening. You know, if the songs are great, we'll even start pitching them.
So to wrap up, you mentioned that, you know, people can find you at six-figure... I just totally lost the website.
Sixfiguresongwriting.com.
There we go. Sixfiguresongwriting.com. A lot of these people that want to receive more coaching, like what you're talking about, is that something that only starts at a specific time, or is it something that's always open, always
received? Okay, so there's two things. First of all, they're both always open. You can go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, and you can sign up, and I'll send you some cheat sheets, a lyric sheet, a production sheet, a calendar, really helpful tools. If you want to get inside the course, which is always ongoing, which is live Q&As with me, it's me listening to music, it's me putting up things that we're actually pitching for with inside our company. You know, we've literally had stuff that's like $100,000, $40,000, $80,000. We work on very big ads and it's been very, very nice to do so. We just wrote a song for a Netflix, a theme song. We're doing lots and lots of different work. But inside the class, we are posting that. If you want to get into the class, you go to sixfiguresongwriting.com. So either go to sixfiguresongwriting.com and you can find out about how to get in the course, or you can go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, the number written out, and you can get freebies from me on some tools. But you can either join the class or just get some freebies. But if you feel like at the end of the day, you really do need to be in an environment with somebody who's going to help you have collaborators, it's really worth it. I mean, the class is $98 a month. And for that, you get a live session with me, you get Q&As. My director of film and TV, Sonnet, she does a music breakdown every Monday where she shows you a song that's working and we analyze why it's working. We put up searches that are coming into our agency and you can pitch for those. You collaborate with people in the class. We're continuing always to help motivate you to get you there. And you have this whole curriculum that you can watch on your own time as well, of videos and worksheets and a whole program that you can be in. If you feel like you need that, that's great. I'm actually going to make a discount code just for people who are CD Baby listeners. It's going to be CD Baby. So if you go to sixfiguresongwriting.com, the number six, and you want to join the course, you can put in the code CD Baby and you'll get a discount on the class as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Are you, we're going to have to get you out to the DIY Musician Conference. We'll have to talk about that.
I would love that. Where's it going to be next year? In Nashville?
Yes, it's going to be in Nashville.
I saw that. When is that?
It's in the end of August, August 25th through 27th.
That's awesome. The last thing I want to say, just because you just mentioned DIY, is I wasn't even planning to say this, but it's so important. Ari Herstand, who you know, and CD Baby wrote the foreword to his book, How to Make It in the Music Business. He was just on my podcast, which is Don't Keep Your Day Job. And he had so much great stuff to say for people who are DIY. He was talking about Amanda Palmer and Claire Means and his friend who uses YouNow. Between Patreon, Periscope, and YouNow, he's researched and written a book, and inside is all different things. In fact, he talks about me, which is really nice, about licensing, but he talks about artists who are making $30,000-$40,000 a month using subscription models and all that stuff. So I think he's just fantastic, and I interviewed him on my show, Don't Keep Your Day Job, so that podcast is available. People want to hear Ari, and I know that you guys have supported him as well, and you guys have a podcast with him. I just think he's fantastic, and I think that artists need to remember that it's not about waiting for someone to come along and hand you an opportunity. It's about creating content. What can you be creating and being a squeaky wheel? And when you take matters into your own hands, I think that right now the DIY, the gap between the man, so to speak, and what you can do on your own and make it has shrunk completely. And I think if you want to license your music, or you want to, you know, be a musician who has a subscription model, whatever it is you want to do, it's 100% doable. I will leave you with this. The evidence is there. The evidence is there. So many artists are making a living licensing their songs, not just me. I can list names and names and names, and you could do the research and find hundreds and hundreds and thousands and thousands. The evidence is there. The evidence is there that artists have figured this out. This is the best time to be a musician because you're actually attractive. You know, I do workshops in LA. If you're in LA, I do something called Sync Keepers, and we have six music supervisors come to every single event. And the last one we had, was fantastic. We had Mike Turner, who does ads, and we had Lindy Klowitz from the soundtrack department at Disney. They literally were asking people in the audience to send them music. I couldn't believe how generous. And I said to them, can you explain why you actually want this music from these unknown people? And they all said, Jen Malone and Daryl Berg, all of the people who were there who work on TV, film, and ads, Gabe McDonough, who used to head up Leo Burnett, they said, because indie artists are easier to clear, and they want to discover something new. They want to discover the kid who's from Silver Lake or Brooklyn or Detroit. They want that story. And if they can clear that song for $80,000 as opposed to the $500,000 or $1 million they'd give to CeeLo, they'd much rather do it. So you are wanted, and walk away with that. And you're going to have excuses. You're going to turn this off and say, oh, that just happened for her. Oh, she was just lucky. Try to drown out that voice with what I'm telling you right now. The evidence is there. And if you apply yourself and you commit to a program, get yourself into a group of people who you can collaborate with, find the mentor, find a plan, use the freebies at sixfiguresongwriting.com that you can download, but use it and commit to it. You will be in a different place this time next year. I guarantee it. And every step you take will turn into like 20 steps because most people don't put in the action, and momentum will grow on itself. Next thing you know, you'll have meetings set up. You'll have notes to think about. You'll have a conversation with someone, and tell people what you want to do. Don't play it close to the vest. And next thing you know, you'll start, you know, beginning with the end in mind, ask yourself that question every day. What do you want to do? And what can you do today? What are three things you can do? Who could you reach out to? What can you be creating? What can you listen to? How can you get there? And you will. I guarantee it.
Excellent. Great words to end on. And yeah, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you for feeling that this was worthy of it. I absolutely love it. You can tell I'm so passionate. I want people to live a life of purpose. I was at the stoplight the other day. I'm looking at cars next to me, and I look at people. People are like sad. And you know, it is sad because it's like on some level, there's a voice. We know we're not going to be here very long, and that sucks. And we don't want to be aware of that, but we also don't usually like what we're doing, and so there's a part of us that's like despair. And I think if people could just enjoy their life a little bit more, not only would they be happy and fulfilled, but they can make a really beautiful world for people around them. So I hope you will follow what you love.
All right. Agreed. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks again to Kathy for coming on the podcast. A reminder to check out the new course, How to Make Money in Music. And that URL again is smarturl.it/CDBabyREKathy. And I'll even be making a guest appearance in that course, like I said, and it should be a good time. Lots of great information, and they're both fun and entertaining to listen to, and they have great things to say. Finally, our listener line is open. If you have any questions or comments you want us to answer on the podcast, the number is 360-524-2209. That's 360-524-2209. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or just head over to the podcast website and leave a comment in the show notes for this episode. The web address is just cdbabypodcast.com. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I'll catch you later. Bye. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.